Hey, everybody. We have a sponsor here at Jiu-Jitsu Geeks. It is Avid Gamer Wear, a gaming brand, lifestyle brand for gamers. Y'all play games, don't you? Brian, Aaron?
I love games.
Games are my favorite thing.
Aaron?
Every day.
Every day. That was forced. That was forced. Hey, check them out at AvidGamerWear.com or on Instagram at AvidGamerWear. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Just to let you guys know, Hansel Grace loves the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks. Extending control. A buckle and bump,
redirect your force. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks podcast. I'm joined with my host, E.T., co-host E.T.
What's up, Aaron?
We're missing Brian Engel today.
Strong word.
Yeah. But we replaced him today with a good guest, probably best known as Nick the Tooth. Nick, how are you, my man?
What's going on, man? How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing well.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's our pleasure, absolutely. So, I know you just got done training, right?
I did. I just walked off the mat 10 minutes ago.
Nice, and you train at the Art of Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, with the Mendez brothers.
Well, you know, Nick, man, when E.T. and I started this podcast years ago, we're two jiu-jitsu guys, and we set out to just talk to cool people. You know, we there's a lot of people we wanted to chat with, and through your writing, through Fightland, your book, you being on Eddie Bravo's podcast, you doing the vlogs for UFC. You know, I've kind of followed you for quite a while, and especially on Instagram, your post, it got to be like, this is the guy that, you know, that the reason we started this podcast was to talk to cats like you. You're in the art, you're in the surfing, you train jiu-jitsu, the UFC, you're a photographer, you're a great writer. And so it was just really cool to kind of hook up with you and, get to chat with you for a few minutes. But point being, I don't know where to go with this interview. There's so many directions we could take it because you got so many cool interests.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it'd probably be great to start, like, you know, with jiu-jitsu and just the first thing everyone asks me is they know that I roll at AOJ, and I started at AOJ. I actually didn't start jiu-jitsu until the gym opened. Like, I started training probably that year. Dana set me up with, because I told him, I was like, dude, I'm going to be writing a book. I want to get into jiu-jitsu. And I'm a lifelong wrestler. I didn't wrestle in college, but I wrestled from like 8 years old to 18, where I wrestled every season. I would wrestle in the off season. I would do camps, summer camps. And so being a wrestler, it was like, okay, well, this jiu-jitsu thing, I kind of get into it. I really wanted to get into Nogi. So he was like, okay, well, at UFC headquarters, they had a private trainer there who was Fredson Pyshaw.
Okay.
Who was really kind of the, if you think about it, that featherweight division of IBJJF and the Worlds and the Mundials, the hardest, he was the one who pointed this out, Guy Mendez, was that is the division. If you can dominate that division, that's where all the beasts are.
Yeah.
And so Fredson was kind of like the Hoffa before Hoffa. You know, so Fredson had won 3 world championships back in the early 2000s. And so I started training. You know, what would happen is I would go to Vegas, I would stay with Dana, and I would, you know, I'd be there for like 2-3 weeks before a fight. And so then I would just go with Dana to the UFC office, and downstairs, there's a private gym, and I would just do privates with Fredson. And so for a few months, that's how I kind of got into it. And he was the one that said, hey, you should roll. You know, I live in Newport Beach. And he was like, I asked him, what do you think about the brothers, about the Mendez brothers? He goes, yeah, that's some of the best training. You know, what if you live there? You know, obviously, if I lived in Vegas, I'd still be training under that. But being here in Newport. So shortly after I started training with Fredson, the Mendez brothers opened the gym.
Nice.
And so I'm very good. I'm very close friends with Pat Smore.
Yep.
So he was the one that also was like, got up, we're opening this gym. You got to start training there as soon as they open it. So that was really my first gym I ever joined. And so I've been there since.
Well, being being longtime friends with Dana White, I was going to ask you why you chose jiu-jitsu, because I'm sure you had access to get into whatever martial art you wanted with that hookup. So was it coming from a wrestling background that drew you to want to get
in? No, I think you have to be an absolute idiot to let people hit you in the head. I don't know who in the world would subject themselves to. I've had a number of concussions. I've got a concussion surfing. I've been hit by my board. I got a concussion skateboarding. I skate a lot.
Yep.
And so I was skating a pool in Florida, and I think I was doing a 50-50. It was like an 11-foot pool, and I just freaking my board slipped out from under me, and I went face down and right on my head at the bottom in the flat.
Oh, wow.
And luckily I had a helmet on.
Oh,
and,
key.
But that had to be, and I also played football back in Vegas. So it had to be one of the worst concussions like I've ever had. So when it came time to, hey, do you want to, mind you, I've done a lot of boxing and I've actually sparred and I hit the nips quite a bit. And, at this point I was like, for me, when I started writing the book, I thought, okay, MMA springs from jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is obviously the most important part of MMA. I've already wrestled. I've already done it. I'm not going back. That was way too hard. I don't want to do that again as I'm older. And so that's why I kind of turned. I went into, because I had done boxing. I knew I didn't want to spar. I didn't want to get hit in the head. I definitely don't want to kick anybody and get kicked. I mean, that is so painful. I've done it. So I was like, the next best thing is jiu-jitsu. And it was a very easy transition, too, because, I always think about guys who start jiu-jitsu later in life and they've never wrestled.
Yeah.
It must be very difficult being smashed and having so much sweat dripping in your face, rolling on that mat. For me, it was like, oh, man, I felt like I was at home. I was like, yeah, I love it instantly.
Yeah.
So, I trained even once I started training and I got into jiu-jitsu, I averaged probably 6 days a week, maybe seven. I just go every day.
Wow. How long have you trained jiu-jitsu? I think you already mentioned it.
I started training with Fredson where I would come into town. And mind you, when I'm with Dana, it's really on Dana's schedule because he's so busy. And, it was only when I had the really downtime when he was at the office.
Yeah.
And I would just go underneath the UFC private offices into that gym, and I'd just call friends, and he'd come meet me. And so, I did it for, like, probably 3 months with him, but it was very sporadic, very hard. I found that while I learned a lot mentally about the understanding the game from Fredson, and that's primarily what I did. We would talk jiu-jitsu, and he was the one who really told me about how, just how it works and the philosophy behind it. It was really when you join a gym and you've got sparring partners and you've got, and I'm lucky. I actually spar with Hoppe all the time.
Right.
But really, I spar with Hoppe a lot because I also do yoga. And so, but it wasn't really until they opened the gym like last June or July, not last, but the year before.
Yeah.
So it's been like two and a half years. I'd say a little over two years.
Now, another place that I've seen from your Instagram that you train, you mentioned knowing PM Tanori, the founder of Ruka, is that gym that they have there. And you've done an interview where you gave a tour of Ruka and showed that place. And BJ Penn's a regular there when he's in camp. Bushesh has been there. I mean, the who's who has been inside that, I guess, a private gym, right? What's the deal with that?
Yes, it's a private gym. So where I live very close to the beach. I'm a server.
Yep.
So I live really close to the beach, and literally three blocks away, literal block, neighborhood blocks away, is the Ruka warehouse. And so it's a private gym, and I have access to it. And so I'll just go over there. I go over there, probably 3-4 days a week, and I'll work, I'll stretch, I'll lift, and I'll often train there. I'll do privates, we'll get a bunch of guys. So Bear from Shoulder Roll, rolled like 3 days ago. He called me up and texted me. I was like, hey, you want to roll? So we just have this like informal network of guys who just kind of show up there. But every time I go in there, even when I lift, so yesterday I was in there with Jason Perillo, who's a very good friend of mine, and Rob Emerson, who's fighting on the Bellator card on Friday.
And Jason was BJ's boxing coach, is that right?
He was his boxing coach for, that's a really interesting story. He was his boxing coach primarily for, like, earlier fights, you know, with Diego and Diaz and GSP, but he wasn't for the last camp.
Okay.
Yeah, if you saw the last fight against Edgar, it was a markedly different, you know, strategy that BJ employed. And yeah. I was with Perlo, you know, at least every other day during BJ's entire camp. And Perlo was like, yeah, he hasn't called me out. I haven't been out to Hawaii. I haven't, you know, I haven't been training. I don't know who's training him out there. So although he was in the corner with him for moral support, he had nothing to do with this camp.
Yeah, well, being a huge BJ Penn fan, that's unfortunate. So how did you, you know, you're out in California, you're training at just, you know, probably what would be Disneyland for me, the Art of Jiu-Jitsu and Ruka. And then you are also a surfer. Have you surfed your entire life? Are you, you're from Florida or Nevada?
No, you know, I've lived all over. I mean, I'm from New Orleans. I was born in New Orleans. I spent summers in New Orleans, and I, but I grew up in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And that's how Dana and I know each other. We,
that's right.
We grew up together. And so, and Lorenzo, too, who also owns the UFC. So I played football with Lorenzo since I was, you know, 12, 13 years old. I've known these guys forever. Mm-hmm. And, but we would come out, we would also take vacations out here in summer, and I started surfing, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. And then once I got out of high school, I would spend, you know, 3-4 months at a time out here surfing. And then after I got out of college, I moved out here.
God, did you get hooked up with PM Tenori through surfing or jiu-jitsu?
I know PM through surfing.
Really? Okay, that's what I...
Yeah, and he was the one that was like, oh, you want to... He was already a black belt. He was like, oh, you want to get into to jiu-jitsu? Well, we're opening a school. You got to meet the Mendez brothers. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Nice.
And I didn't know who they were. I didn't realize, at the time, I didn't realize how important this gym was going to be, really, in the whole jiu-jitsu scene. Not just in this area, but really, you know, I think they've really set the bar for... Because I travel... Traveling all over with Dana, I've been to schools, I've rolled in at least 50, 60 academies, and that academy has not only set the bar, but when I go into a new school, they're like, oh man, you train with the Mendez brothers, how's the, and that's the first thing I get is questions about the academy.
Yeah.
And so, it's so, you know, it's so progressive and amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book. You're a photographer. And you put out a book of a lot of the photographs that you've taken going around to all these UFC events. And how did you get into photography? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a law school grad, which isn't, it's not, I work, you know, I've done some recruiting for a law firm. So it's not uncommon for folks to get out of law school and go, yeah, I want to do something else. But with
yeah, when I was in New Orleans, my wife and I were in New Orleans, and she was like a photography major in school. She went to Loyola in New Orleans, and so we had a dark room in the house, so there were cameras everywhere, and so I just started shooting then, you know, and that was like 15 years ago, and so I've always just shot, and so going backstage and going to fights with Dana, I was like, dude, there's no photographers really doing the backstage stuff. I want to shoot this. And he's like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, Dana's great. He's always given me whatever access that I wanted. And so I just felt like, man, I'm going to be back here. I want to capture this. No one else is really capturing it. It's not for myself. First, it was just for myself. And then just giving me something to do while we're at the fight. And so I started shooting that way. And being a writer, and I've always been a writer.
Okay.
I'm primarily a writer, and so the photography was really just to support the book. I kind of recognized if I was going to do a book, and I decided really early on to do a book because of that accent, being a writer. And so then I just realized, you know, people are going to want to keep photographs to accompany this. It'll give it a richer experience, and that's where I really started shooting. Not that I hadn't shot. I've always shot, like, street photography. Very much in the street photography, much more than sports or action photography. As a matter of fact, if you look at my photography in the book, or just any, even my photography on Fightland, very different. It has a very different look than most, like, really good MMA photographers. And I consider good MMA photographers like Brian Boko
right.
and James Law. has always been, I've always been very influenced by a street photographer called Gato Moriyama. And he does a lot of black and white, really trippy and weird angles, and very kind of crushed blacks is what photographers call it, with the look that he gets. And so I really kind of just said, okay, I already shoot this way. I'm not going to start trying to shoot like Ryan Loco and James Bond. It's not what I do.
Right.
So I just kind of took that approach, my voice, so to speak, photography, just started using that in the MMA world.
Yeah. Well, the book is great. I stumbled upon it. It's really readily available. I picked it up at, you know, a big box bookstore locally here in Virginia, and it's just amazing. I mean, the writing is good and the photography is good. It's a really good book.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You should throw the title out for everybody who's listening.
Yeah, Nick, it's Into the Cage. Like I said, really readily available. One of your newer...
Pick it up, it'll change your life.
Yes.
let me ask you a question. How long was that... What was the time period that that book was written through? Because it seems like you hung out with Joe Rogan, and you were at... you were all over the place with so many different fighters in that book. How long did it take you to produce that?
2 years. It was a two-year, like, intensive... that's all I did for 2 years.
Right.
Wow.
It was a great experience. I'll never do another MMA book. it was enjoyable, and I've been approached by people to do other MMA books with big fighters and other even jiu-jitsu books, and brothers and I have talked about it. I would probably do something with the brothers before I would do something with anyone else.
That would be awesome.
Well, you know, if that's your MMA swan song book, that's the one to go out on, because I can't think of another book that goes behind the mixed martial arts world as well as Into the Cage.
Yeah, thank you. It was really, for me, it was just like, okay, I don't want this to define what I do and my art and what, you know what I mean? You really have to, like, if you did two books, if you did one book, it's like, okay, cool. You know, there are great writers who, John Updike and other, Norman Mailer, have written about boxing. It didn't define them, you know, it didn't define them because they didn't end up doing 2, 3, 4 books on it. So that was really the way I approached it. It was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to write for Fightland for a very short period of time, and then that's it. I'm not going to do anything else with MMA. And that's kind of where I'm getting to now, is to the end of what I'm going to do with MMA. I don't think, but what's really interesting, and the reason I agreed to do the podcast, I don't do many, like, MMA podcasts.
Yep.
Was that I got into jiu-jitsu because I wanted to understand. It was the most complicated aspect of MMA, and it was really the part of MMA that I was like, oh, they're going to the ground. I can appreciate it from a wrestling standpoint, but on the jiu-jitsu side, I just didn't understand what was going on because it was so advanced. So the more I realized I had to learn jiu-jitsu, once I did, it opened my mind to what was happening in MMA. What was interesting is that I got into jiu-jitsu because of the book and because of the project. Now, as I leave that world behind as far as writing and photographing MMA, jiu-jitsu is something I'll probably carry forward throughout the rest of my life because I love it so much. I like it more than surfing now, you know?
Isn't that funny? I started jiu-jitsu. I've been training for, 10, 11 years. Have been pretty healthy. No major injuries. And I was in a tournament 2 months ago. Blew out my MCL. I didn't know what it was, you know, until I got into the doctor and all that. But my knee, I mean, it was jacked up. I couldn't straighten my leg. So I go through this cognitive, you know, thinking about it. And it's like, well, this could be it, you know? I mean, and I can't put my finger on it, but there's something more to it. Because I got to this point, I was telling E.T. before we started the podcast, I went, well, I can't quit jiu-jitsu. I don't really know why. I can't tell you why, but it's just something I've got to keep doing. Thankfully, the knee's better. The MCL will heal. As far as knee injuries go, it's the one to have. But I've been thinking about that a lot. Yeah, definitely, or meniscus for sure. But I don't know what it is about jiu-jitsu, but it just, man, it pulls you in like crazy.
What I think it is, and you know, we can all speculate, but I think I am shocked by the comparison or how similar it fires the neurons in my brain just like surfing does. And I think a lot of it is that it requires you to go into that state of flow where it's like a meditative. It really is a martial arts in that perspective, in the sense that, you know, you just completely have to be in the moment. And Kelly Slater actually talked about how, you know, the comparisons between jiu-jitsu and surfing and how similar they were. And what he's really saying is that, you know, we experience things in the external world, but our reality really is, as human beings, is that feeling, is we are feeling creatures. And it gives you that same feeling that surfing does. Hence, Joel Tudor.
Yep.
Being a jiu-jitsu, being one of the greatest surfers in the world, hands down one of the greatest ever. And all of a sudden, doing jiu-jitsu, starting jiu-jitsu, and then becoming, you know, a top-notch jiu-jitsu guy and getting his black belt 4 years.
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing. It's like, you know, you're flowing. It's like riding away. Fred Fischel was the one that was like, dude, it's just like surfing. You got to relax. Just let it flow. Let the guy, your guy, if you're playing top game, let him flow underneath you like a wave and you just react, you know? You can't control your board in the sense you can't force a wave. You have to surf the wave. You cannot control the wave. And so jiu-jitsu, when I'm rolling with you, you know, I really have to, when you get to those higher levels, unless, you know, it's funny, like the lower belts, guys will just, like, hold on as tight as they can, da-da-da-da. You watch, like, Guy and Hopper, man, there is just a flow going on there. That they're like, okay, you're going to go A, I'm going to do B. You're going to do B, I'm going to do C. You're going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, when you, I walk away some nights from jiu-jitsu class and go, any night I train is a good night. But some nights you're like, yeah, that wasn't the best one. You know, that wasn't a great session.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who I tapped or who tapped me. That's not what it is. It's if I got to that flow point in the class. You know, if I got there, I was flowing with people. And there's people you can do it better with than
no,
others.
No, that's a really good point. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I had an awful night last night where I was like, eh. And I looked back and I was like, it was really interesting because I was like, wait a minute, man, I tapped him. And then I just got in a stuck position a few times with a few other guys. And I was like, wow, you know, quantitatively, if I looked at how I did last night, I did well. But I just didn't reach that point. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what seals a good session, you know, for me or not. I mean, I rode down our main instructors in Virginia Beach, and I went to an open mat one time and walked in, and it's nothing but killers on the mat, but this high level of guys, and we rolled just a bunch, and it was just the entire time you're just kind of lost in it, and I got destroyed. But one of the best training sessions ever, and that's kind of when I realized, I was like, it's not about getting tapped
or not. It's not the result.
It's not
the
result at all.
Sure.
It's do you get to that point. So,
with my jiu-jitsu, what really helped me was rolling with BJ Penn a few years ago, like right after I started. And he was like, you know, he was showing me some guard things, and he goes, listen, man, I really approached jiu-jitsu. Like, my thinking was I wanted to get to the point where my guard would never get passed. And I figured if I got to that point, I'd get really good. And obviously he did. He won a world championship. And so I kind of said, I actually quit playing top and I only would play bottom. And at first, I mean, dude, being a wrestler and playing off my back, you know, I would, at first I probably got passed like 400 times, you know, but it didn't matter. I started like, you know, even within a couple weeks, I started getting stoked on it. Even though I got passed, kept getting passed because I could see the incremental improvements in my guard. Incremental. And now I'm to the point where, you know, my guard rarely gets passed, even though I won't start coughing. You know, and so, but it was just that you don't have to win to be stoked. You just have to focus on a certain aspect of your game, and as that improves, that's what gives you that satisfaction.
Absolutely. Well, hey, transitioning to something that I know very little about, but I'm really interested in. I only know about it from your Instagram and Googling the show. Is this new MMA? TV show that you've done some photography for, I'm guessing, but can you tell us about that? What is it? What's the deal?
I read last year that there was a new show. There was a new show coming out called Kingdom, and it's a dramatic series set in the MMA world. And so that looked really fascinating. Think of it like The Sopranos. Instead of you're dealing with, you know, it's an Italian family, you're dealing with a family that owns a gym, and just going through the, you know, the dramatic aspects of that and how difficult it can be.
Yep.
And so, I immediately was like, shit, man, this looks awesome. So I called up, I just cold called the producers. I found out who the production company was, and I sent them a book. They actually ordered like 40 books for everyone in the company.
Oh,
and they were like, this is how we want the show to look. And they brought me in, and I met with the creator of the show, Byron Velasco, who's the coolest shit, and friends with Greg Jackson. And before you know it, we had, you know, the MMA world, the jiu-jitsu world are very small. And so I knew him, and he knew, et cetera. And so, you know, it was really for them, the validity, my credentials were the book. They loved the book, man, and the look of it. And so they brought me in, and I actually ended up meeting everybody on set. First off, what really shocked me when I got on set was the attention to the athleticism. The guys who were training for the show and the principal actors were so, I couldn't believe how much MMA they actually knew, and I couldn't believe how athletic they were. Because nice. Typical actors, you know, they'll use stunt doubles, or these guys were doing almost everything themselves. And that was a testament to Joe Stevenson, who was the fight consultant on the show to make sure everything was authentic.
Oh, cool.
And and so yeah, so I got the I came down to the set, and they actually broke me into I played myself on a photographer on the show.
Oh, nice.
So
very
I had
nice.
Acting, yeah, at a big up there, like, can you act? And just to get to know, just so you know me. Someone asked me if something, I could do something. I'm like, fuck yeah, I can do it. You know? So I was like, fuck yeah, can I act? Yeah. Could I act? No. You know?
Yeah.
So I show up, man, and I got like fucking three pages of dramatic scenes with these guys. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have been over my head here. And, but it was cool, man. It was cool. They brought me in, and I was photographing in the gym, and got in a beef with one of the fighters, and it was a little over the top of that, but it was cool, man. It was a great experience. And so they ended up seeing some of the, while we were filming, I was also shooting them. So they ended up seeing some of those photographs, and they said, listen, man, we really would like your photography for the opening credits of the show. And so, I ended up showing them all my photography from MMA, and they ended up looking at my street photography. They were like, listen, we want to use more street photography than MMA photography because it's a show set in the MMA world, but it's really a gritty, you know, real world show. And so, I ended up doing a bunch of street photography for them too. And that's when they just finished, I think they wrapped the credit like last week, and we'll be debuting them on MMA Underground, I think, in like a week.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So, yeah. So we'll give you that sequence and kind of talk about that. But yeah, so it was cool, man. And, you know, I didn't realize it, but Frank Grillo, who is one of the stars of Captain America, and he was shooting The Purge, Anarchy, and he's the lead in the show, and is a brown belt, jiu-jitsu brown belt, who trained under Hicks and Gracie.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
So,
no, yeah,
I didn't know that
so
either.
Was really cool.
Oh,
yeah, it was so cool. And so to talk to him about, you know, what it was like to train with Hickson in the early days. And I also roll at another gym that's near my house. A friend of mine rolls that. I'll go over there like once every 3 weeks. I roll with James Moran at Moran Jiu-Jitsu. And so James Moran started in the garage. Like Frank started with Hickson. James Moran started with Horry and the Voice.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so it's interesting to get their different takes. On that, because the reality is that at that time, people don't realize there was a lot of static between Hickson and Horian.
Yeah.
I mean, Horian, they wanted Horian, despite what's said, they wanted Horian to be the guy who you know, won the first UFC, but Horian and Hickson just couldn't get together on as far as money.
Yeah.
So they brought Hoyce in, you know, and that's why, that's the reality. They're going to say, Horian's going to say, no, I brought Hoyce in because he would demonstrated the fact that, you know, a smaller guy, and it ended up working out for them, but really it was, they wanted Hicks. There was just that static fun.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, and kind of to wrap up, I want to be respectful, of your time. And this may not another thing that, you know, following you for a little bit and, you know, on Instagram and also listening to you on Eddie's podcast. One thing you talked about, and it's hilarious because my wife and I mentioned it to her, and I said it the other day. You talked about being married is walking through a cave, you know, and I like that. I was like, that's a pretty good analogy. I told my wife, you know, we have two young daughters, so I said, you know, we're in the middle of the cave right now, you know, and when the kids are going crazy, I'm like, we're just in the middle of the cave, just keep walking. You know, so I thought that was a pretty cool analogy. But, you know, you're into jiu-jitsu, you surf, you skate. That's not the norm. And maybe this isn't a question for somebody who lives in California, because it might be the norm. But how do you manage all that and a family? Do you know what I mean? It's hobbies that consume you. We talked about jiu-jitsu. They're lifestyle hobbies. You don't, you know, I don't know. I've never golfed, but I think you golf 18 holes and leave it there, maybe. I don't know. But you don't leave you don't leave jiu-jitsu at the academy.
Yeah, I mean, I think jiu-jitsu is actually a lot easier than surfing in some respects, but surfing's the same way also. I think, you know, I think it's actually easy with jiu-jitsu. You just freaking bring your kids to the gym and you enroll them in the classes.
That's what I was going to say,
get them into jiu-jitsu, and then it becomes like a family thing. Then you're like, hey, we all do it. It's, you know what I mean? But surfers do the same thing here. You know, they're like, you know, my daughter is old and started jiu-jitsu, but surfers are like, hey, I'm bringing my kids out there like the Rotolos. I'm very good. You know the Rotolo twins?
Yes.
Kay and Ty.
Yeah.
So I'm very close with their dad, Chris, and Nicole. And, dude, the whole family freaking does jiu-jitsu. That's why the kids are so good. Naya, their 4-year-old whatever sister, she rolls.
Yep.
And the two brothers roll. And the mom rolls. And the dad rolls. And so this isn't, like, it doesn't take away from family time. It enhances family time. And it's the same thing with surfing. Chris brings them all out to the beach. And he's like, we're going surfing now. And no one has a choice, and that's what we do. And so those, you know, these lifestyle things, that is where, you know, I guess you could say that it could be like that for golf or tennis where, you know, like Tiger Woods' dad brought him out there when he was playing and he started playing at a young age. But, I mean, those are really sports that, you know, even if my wife doesn't surf, she likes to go to the beach. And so we'll go down to the beach and I'll surf and I'll come back up. And that's kind of like we have all these things that I do are things that we can do together. You know?
Nice.
I think it's kind of an easy thing to make that work, you know, is to bring them, get them in early, especially for girls. I think jiu-jitsu is actually more important for girls than it is for boys.
I do too.
I think it's can you imagine, you know, having that, becoming like a purple or a brown belt or a black belt for a girl, that confidence when she's 19, 20 years old? I mean, that's amazing. I couldn't think of anything better. It's like Kelly Slater said this, and I'll always go back to Kelly Slater. And so Kelly comes in and he'll roll it or jiu-jitsu. But Kelly said the same thing. If I could get my kids into any sport, it wouldn't even be surfing. It would be jiu-jitsu. Nothing's going to teach them respect and self-confidence and, you know, self-defense like jiu-jitsu.
Absolutely.
It's great. You know, it's even better than, like I grew up a wrestler. I think I would put my kids in jiu-jitsu before wrestling, although I'd probably put them in both. But jiu-jitsu is more fun than wrestling. There's nothing fun about wrestling.
Yeah.
Wrestling is a nightmare. It's so hard.
Yeah.
You guys have any questions about like rolling with? I often get questions about rolling with the brothers and what's it like, you know, to have that opportunity to roll with them. And like I said, I roll with often because I do. You know, I started with no gi, and then you know, they were like, you got to get on the gi. You got it. Both Frenson and Papa both told me, you have to do gi and no gi. You can't do just one or the other. And so I've really made, you know, and now I do no gi once or twice a week with Papa. And the great thing about that is we have a very small class. And
yeah.
We'll have like 10 to 12, so 16 guys on the mat. And I get to roll with Papa whenever I want. I'm very close with the brothers, by the way. And so
I have a question. I have a question for you about that. What's the difference between their sparring when they're gearing up for a tournament compared to when they're maybe in between or just relaxed. Is there any difference of how they turn their level up against their training partners, or how's that, Nick?
You know, I would want to say, yeah, there is a difference in the quantity of like hard roles that they'll put themselves in. Like if they gear up to go into like a world's camp or ADCC, they will notch up who they're rolling against. And so, like when world camp starts, we have the guys from, you know, we'll have Andre and the guys from Montrose coming up 2-3 times a week. And so, you know, that's when Hoppe will be rolling against Andre and Keenan and, you know, JT and all these guys. And so, but when it's not, when we're not in camp for that, then, and what's cool is I train with all those guys, and I roll Keenan, Andre, all those guys. And so, but that's what changes. But otherwise, even if Hoppe or Gee is rolling with, you know, a white belt or a blue belt, it doesn't even matter. They're going to win. And if you bring it up the next level, they're going to bring it up. And for them, they're so competitive that it's just, they're going to match whatever level, and they're going to beat you, and they're going to submit you. And I don't care who you are. Yeah. And it's so their intensity while they're rolling, no matter who they're rolling with, doesn't change, but the level of competition that comes into the gym before competition is what changes.
Without giving out any names, have you seen any guys that fight for maybe the UFC or Bellator come in there and get schooled by the brothers?
Oh, absolutely. No, they all get smoked. I remember Miles Jury came in, and Miles is a good friend of mine, and he came in and rolled with Hoppe, and his eyes afterwards were just wide, and he just was like, I didn't know what jiu-jitsu was until I just rolled with him. He goes, I've been doing this for a long time. He goes, I cannot believe that level of jiu-jitsu. And he's like, I roll with Beth, so that is another level. Right. I mean, guys who are, you know, top-level guys like Josh Thompson, you know, or look at the video of Jake Shields, you know, and it's no disrespecting them. They're MMA fighters. They're not jiu-jitsu guys, which means they can only dedicate 20%, 15% of their time to jiu-jitsu. Even Joe Lozano is like, man, Joe was telling me that he loves train jiu-jitsu. It's his favorite thing. He just can't do it as much as he would want to.
Right.
Because they have to focus on their stand-up and their cage work and their wrestling and their, you know what I mean, and their kicking and, you know, just there's just so much more that they need to do. So, you know, yeah, those guys come in, MMA fighters, I don't care if they're freaking Josh Barnett. Hoppe is going to, and Nogi is going to freaking school. He's too fast. He blows too well. He actually has more. Hoppe will have more trouble against, you know, a guy like Keenan, who just does jiu-jitsu and is a fairly new black belt, or probably even the knee-outs than he would have against any of the top level MMA guys. Don't even kid yourself. None of the top level guys in MMA can hold a candle to Hoppe in Nogi. I've seen him in the gym.
I believe it. I believe it. There's a pitcher in Into the Cage that I want to ask about. It's probably, if I could have any pitcher as a poster on my wall, it'd be the one where
I know exactly.
You know the one I'm talking about. Which one is it, Nick?
The BJ Penn and Ronda.
That's the one, and Ronda and the Art of Jiu-Jitsu. Can you tell us the story behind that photo?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's always asking me to sell photos, and it's something I'll probably end up getting into. I'm so lazy about doing stuff like that, but I know a lot of people want to get that photo, and I'll probably do like a limited edition signed, you know, frame poster thing, print thing. But that was a great story, man. You know, like I said, I am close to BJ, and I hooked Roots of Fight. I'm friends with Jesse Katz, who owns Roots of Fight, and I'm friends with PM. And so, at the time, Rich Chow, who's now the matchmaker for Bellator, was running Ruka Sport. And so Rich used to be BJ's manager. And so, I mean, this whole world is so small. And so I hooked up Roots of Fight and Ruka. So they decided to do a collaboration, a BJ Penn collaboration, and they were going to film this documentary. And so then they were like, well, what do you think about getting Ronda? And so I gave them Ronda. I know Ronda really well. I was with Ronda when Dana told her that she was going to be in the UFC that first dinner. And
oh, wow.
And so, So I was like, yeah, here's Rhonda's number. Let's make it all happen. And so next thing you know, we're filming a documentary, mini documentary, about PJ Penn. And Rhonda agreed to come down and roll. And so we're like, let's do it. And AOJ, and she shows up, and it was fun. And she shows up in a blue Jeep. A colored geezer, no go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All white.
And, yeah, I mean, that is a no-go. The brothers are super, super meticulous about everything. And they were like, okay, she won, you know, a bronze medal in the Olympics, and this key, she can roll there. We'll make an exception. And so it was cool, man. And so we closed off the gym, and I shot photographs, and they filmed it, and they rolled. And it was amazing to see Hoppe didn't roll with her, but he was showing her some things, but she rolled and did judo with Guy and BJ, and they were, afterwards, they were like, man, she is so effing strong. It is amazing. Just amazing. But yeah, I mean, it was really cool, man. It was cool to see, because they battled, man. She is a warrior, and they went back and forth and back and forth. It was really amazing. She was, of course, man, she was very blown away by how good he was. I mean, people don't realize, like, he is the Hoppe. Here's the thing about Hoppe and Guy. They have very different games. Guy is 100% only a top player. And if he's playing bottom, he's only playing bottom to get a sweep to come on top. And that's his game. Hoppe, if Hoppe's playing guard, which he primarily pulls guard, and Guy doesn't, he will go for ankle picks, and he'll take you down, and he'll throw you. But Hoppe, if he's playing guard, he's gonna barrel bowl or do whatever he has to do to get to your back. He's a back. That's all he wants to do, to take the back. Where Guy doesn't, he's a baseball show guy.
Right.
So it's that was really, you know, rolling with them too. And Andre was the one who pointed that out. You really have to. I found you really have to find your game. Your game. My game is really a lot more like, I love barrel bowl like Hoppe, but my game is a lot more sweep the top game. I love the top game like Guy. So, you know, taking that top position. So anyways, back to, you know, that rabbit trailing back out of that, it was really cool to see these guys just get them all rolling the gym. It was one of those moments where you're like, wow, this is history right here. This will never happen again. You know, the greatest, you know, the four greatest on the map.
Yeah, I love that photo. And that's a photo. That's not a still from a video, is it? That's a that's actual, that expression you captured.
That's me photographing that, yeah. I was the only one photographing, allowed to photograph that session.
Yeah, that's really epic.
I kick myself for missing that collab t-shirt that came out between Roots of Fight.
Oh, man.
And Ruka.
I was supposed to release another one. It just keeps getting hung up. I don't know what's happening. Oh. I love that, man. I mean, BJ is just amazing.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be coming out with another collaboration that's going to be a different shirt that won't be so limited. Because that was what did they do, like 150 shirts? Those things were gone immediately.
Yeah, they were gone quick. I tried to get one and no go at all.
Yeah.
Well, when you if you ever release that for sale, please let us know. We'll definitely pick up two of those of that photograph. Yeah.
That's cool, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Nick, we will.
Any other questions?
I think we could keep you on for a couple hours, but we'll be respectful of your time. And let you jump and get back to
surfing or jiu-jitsuing or whatever awesome thing you have lined up.
I'm off the mat, so I'm going to chill a little. What I'm doing is I'm actually chilling a little bit before we're about to go down to a friend's house and watch the fights, man. I would be in Vegas, but it's my wife's birthday. So we're going to go down and have a little party and watch the fights. The fights, what do you guys think about the fights tonight?
This is
actually one of the first cards I've been stoked on in a while. Stoked on, you know? Yeah, I mean, I don't know who you guys, I'm always so pumped to watch John Tuck, because he is, his jiu-jitsu, man, is, I love his transitions. I'm all about transitions in the cage. You know, like Ben Saunders looks so good last time, and Luke Rockhold, man, with that reverse triangle. I'm always like, for me, it's funny because when I first got into MMA, I was like, man, I hate it when they go to the ground. Now it's my favorite thing. It's like, yeah, striking's cool, but like I went to Glory not too long ago. It was my first kickboxing thing, and I got freaking bored.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I'm right into this, man. I like boxing, but the kickboxing thing was like, it's okay, it's cool. But I want to see guys do jiu-jitsu, man, on the ground, you know?
More with you.
Much more cerebral. Yeah,
absolutely.
Way more cerebral, yeah. So what do you guys think about Connor versus Brad?
It's going to be a battle.
It's going to be a battle, and I got to tell you what, man. At first, I thought Connor was just a hyping himself, you know, to help himself his popularity. But that kid's the real deal.
Yeah, we'll see if he's a real deal because I know Connor. Connor was actually he called me like 3 weeks ago and was like, dude, I want to come down and train with you at Ruka. So everybody kind of knows, like fighters know. Okay, if you need a private gym to train at, just. They can hit me, and I know most of them, and then I'll open up. I can get them in there, you know, I'll call Pat. And so Connor was going to come down, but he couldn't break away from filming with UFC Tonight or whatever it was. But he was going to come down and roll with us. But, yeah, I think if he wins this fight, that puts him at that level where he's saying he belongs. And so I think he's great, but my feeling is I really need to see being objective. I need to see him against someone like Poirier. Now, if he brings it, he dominates, then it's time to say, okay, this guy is ready for, you know, is he ready for Mendez and Aldo? I don't know. We'll see how dominant he is tonight, if he's dominant at all.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing I've learned from the game, and it's the same thing with jiu-jitsu, dude, I could look really freaking great against the white belt. But you put me against Papa, and my jiu-jitsu looks like shit, you know? And so it. Like guys look really great against lesser opponents. It's really good to look. It's really easy to look good. So we'll see if he looks that good against Poirier.
Yeah, it'll be a good fight. I'm really looking forward to it.
What about Cerrone versus Alvarez? Who do you got?
I got Alvarez all day long.
Do you really?
Yeah, and I love Cerrone, man. I don't. You know, I'm trying to remain. You know, when people ask me, I'm like, oh, if, you know, if I'm emotional about a fighter, I'll stay. You know, but being objective, I'm saying Alvarez. I mean, I think Alvarez is just the complete package. The only thing that, you know, the question on with Alvarez is, okay, you weren't fighting in the elite league. So let's see. This is a test. This is really a test of Bellator. And that's why I think they didn't sign Ben Askren. It's because if we allow Ben Askren to come over here and he dominates like I think he will, then it just makes the organization look bad. It doesn't make UFC look bad. It makes Bellator look great.
Right.
So there was a lot of benefit to saying, all right, man, go win some fights somewhere else, two or three fights, and then we can politically, you know, or saving face, bring you in. Ben is too good to just bring in straight off. That's what Bjorn Bedley wanted, was let this kid go in there and beat GSP, then all of a sudden it validates Bellator. They couldn't. They never could have done that. They can't. They could not allow Ben to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And even with Alvarez, now that this time has passed, he comes in and dominates. You can say, yeah, but he's been out of Bellator for a while. You can't validate that other league, your competition that way.
Yeah.
Hey, I think Alvarez, but you know, it's a test.
Hey, last question, then we'll let you jump. We promise. Are you going to go to the next Metamoris?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't go to the last one because I was rolling at that NABJJF tournament, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
America's.
Uh-huh.
And I was in I didn't make that one. But, yeah, I mean, Henzo, I'm good friends with Henzo, and Sakuraba, what's better than that?
Yeah, I started under one of Henzo's black belts and actually went up there and trained with him. I mean, when I was a white belt, I got my blue belt from him.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
so
cool, man.
I'm definitely biased towards that and really excited for that one. What do you think?
Everyone is. We were in the gym last night, and Hoffman was like, man, it's going to be such a good match. That's so cool. And Rory and JT, man, I mean, that's going to be a great match.
Absolutely.
I think the Rory and JT one is really interesting. Because Rory never wrestled. Rory has only done MMA.
Yep.
He's never rolled in a gi. I mean, I say never. I mean, he's told me he's put it on and he freaking hates it and won't put it on again. You know? So, Rory's one of those, okay, how does pure jiu-jitsu, you know, stack up against pure MMA training? Because not many guys are pure MMA like Rory.
Right.
You know? He's only trained jiu-jitsu in the context of MMA. He's never, like, done anything else.
That's right. So, he's that generation that came up training MMA.
Just MMA.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wilbur's one of my favorite. I love that kid, man.
Yeah, great fighter, great fighter.
Yeah, and he's just a nice kid, very misunderstood. It's funny how these fighters become so misunderstood. Even John Jones, you know, is a really nice guy, man. I mean, I think the pressures of always having someone, you know, being like, Rory, that stuff gets to you, you know?
Sure.
It gets to be like, God, someone's always looking, someone's always asking. So, not in the sense that it's ego inflating, just in the sense that everywhere you look, you're just like, okay, I can't be myself. I think it's got to be hard, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, Nick, thank you for the time today. We really enjoyed it.
It's been a blast. Thank you, sir.
It's been a blast. When are we going
to
see Nick?
Yeah, I really enjoy talking to you guys, man. So send me a link, and I'll make sure and post it. And yeah, and if you guys want to hit me before, you know, one of the next big training camps, we can do it. I could probably even get Hop on here. We can do it together.
Oh, Nick, man, that would be awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah, we you know... Whatever works for you, whatever projects you ever want to talk about or get out there, we'd love to have you on too.
Anytime.
Okay.
When are we going to see a Nick the Tooth T-shirt from Roots of Fight? That's what needs to happen.
A lot of people have asked me for that, man. I don't know, man. I just at some point I just go, it's so over. Like I feel like it just gets to be so difficult. But yeah, maybe one day we will. If it's a Jolo's own one, I could justify that in my own life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nick, thank you. We'd love to have you back sometime, anytime actually you'd like to. But we'll hit you up again.
Let's do it, man. I appreciate it. All right, guys.
Thanks,
take care, Nick. Have a good Saturday.
Bye.